The next matter on the calendar this morning is the case of Save Lake Calhoun versus Tom Landwehr. Council, when you're ready, please identify yourselves for us when you reach the podium.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eric Cardall. I represent the Save Lake Calhoun, the appellant in this matter. And our focus is on the 1990 amendment and what discretion the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources has after that amendment. Our position regarding the statute is that the amendments at 83A.05 through 07 are limited to lakes names that have been used for less than 40 years. And the legislature has reserved the right to change lake names that have been a long time in use, over 40 years. The commissioner's position is interesting in the commissioner's order, addendum page 13 and 14. There seems to be some selective quoting of the text from the statute. For example, in paragraph 11, it explains that there are two procedures now, one procedure being the one where I work with the counties, which is limited.
I'm sorry, can you give me that addendum?
I'm sorry, addendum page 13, paragraph 11.
And this is the addendum of?
The appellant's brief. And the reason I'm only focusing on this is because this is what the commissioner said, the commissioner's office in the order. And so the commissioner is saying in 1990, there was a process that was added where how I'd work with the counties 0.05 through 0.07. And then that would be limited to geographical features that have been used less than 40 years. But I still retain the general power to name whatever geographic feature I wanted whenever I wanted. And so this is the principal statutory dispute. And as the court knows, the DNR commissioner is not a constitutional officer. As a result, the commissioner's sort of powers are determined by statute. Those statutes have to be read carefully. The commissioner doesn't have a power unless it's conferred by statute. But then moving on, the extraordinary assertion number 12, Minnesota statute section 83A.02 vests commissioner with the authority to determine the correct and most appropriate names of lakes. Oh my gosh, I mean, what a power the commissioner would have. Do you know how much meaning people have in local names of places? I mean, if you just named a few lakes.
Let me ask you just a quick question. What difference does it make? Your people can call it Lake Calhoun forever and ever and ever, and on some piece of paper in the government's archives, it says, no, it's really not. It's some other name that we can't even understand. So, you know, what's the harm to the lake owners?
Starting with Lake Calhoun, based on their own testimony and their letters, they're very upset because of their affection.
Certainly they're upset, but what's the harm? They can call that Lake Calhoun forever and ever and ever, as long as they want. They can put their signs up and things like that.
Well, it's the someone from outside is breaking up a social convention, and so it's people on the top, and the DNR commissioner, very powerful authority, is saying unilaterally, this is what you're going to call that lake. And that's very disruptive. I mean, what if Green Lake up by Spicer, I grew up in Redwood Falls, were changed by the commissioner to Blue Lake? Well, I'd be upset.
Well, you'd still call it Green Lake.
Lake Vermilion.
I have a lake myself, and if someone changed the name, I would be upset. But you know what? The Lake Association would keep it as the same name.
Right. And so what the people of Minnesota have done is they ratified a constitution, and they consider lake names so important that they have legislative text regarding that matter. And so the people of Minnesota believe it's important that their public officials follow the law and don't exceed their authority. I mean, that's the premise of the rule of law. We might be able to deal with arbitrary names of lakes, but we can't deal with public officials violating the rule of law.
Mr. Cardall, on that point, you referenced the 40 years. Are you aware of any language, whether preceding the amendment in 1990 or subsequent to it? I'm assuming there isn't because I would have seen it, but you made the point that it was so important that it was limited to 40 years. Why, if it was so important, is there not some delineation of the process that ought to occur when a lake is older than 40 years?
That process is reserved to the state legislature, so there is a process, the legislative process. Not every problem has to be created made into an administrative issue. So there is a process. In fact, that's the problem with the continuing wrong here, is that the DNR commissioner has prematurely renamed the lake. The DNR commissioner needs to acquire state legislative approval before that lake name is changed.
A follow-up to that, you expressed concern, and you do in your written document, too, of the awesome authority of their interpretation or the commissioner's. But is that not the unambiguous language of 83A02? The commissioner shall determine the correct and most appropriate name of the lakes, streams, and places. Is it not, in other words, because that's unambiguous language, that is awesome authority, does not the legislature have the authority to give that great authority to the commission?
No doubt, but the as I was going along with Addendum 13, I mean, come on, 83.02 vests the commissioner with the authority to determine the correct and most appropriate names of the lake. And continuing in that sentence, it talks about the spelling and putting it on the registered list. And then referencing that without referencing number three at all, if you look at page 13 and 14, there's no reference to, I'm sorry, number two, pass upon and give names to lakes, streams, places, and other geographic features of the state for which no single generally accepted name has been in use. So why would the state legislature tell the DNR commissioner that you should defer to the single generally accepted name that has been in use if there wasn't a limitation on the commissioner's authority? I mean, it seems to me like the commissioner just read it and said, ha, correct and most appropriate name. I'm going to tell the courts that that's our job, whereas the state legislature is wanting more stability in names because, well, every developer wants to change the name of Mud Lake to Clear Lake. Why wouldn't you? It just takes a letter to the DNR commissioner to get it changed. You know,
that's an interesting question. Just a letter to the DNR commissioner. It seems to me in this case that the commissioner is arguing that it has statutory authority to change the names of lakes. And in this case, the procedural history seems quite interesting, that it was the Park Board that, as I understand it, approached the DNR about this changing the name of Lake Calhoun, and that the DNR then told the Park Board to make its request to the County Board of Commissioners, if I'm correct, and then County Board of Commissioners took up a petition, even though its council had said, you don't have any authority to get involved in the changing of the name of Lake Calhoun, but it did so anyway. And then the county board recommended to the DNR that it change the name of the lake. That's what happened here.
That's right. And so the county attorney recognized the 40-year restriction on that procedure, which the DNR commissioner recognizes in the order and then just falls back on the general authority. And so
what is your understanding about where that general authority is being argued? What you've just said in terms of these addendums?
Yeah, and that's the concern that here you have the DNR commissioner not citing 83.02.2. And so you don't even see the DNR commissioner struggling with the limitations. You see the DNR commissioner should be in there saying, I see the state legislature has an interest in keeping stability in lake names. I mean, even like Lake Superior, right? We want that to be Lake Equality, right?
Well, here's a question I have. I don't think that anybody has cited the Hubbard case the Minnesota Supreme Court case from 2010 involving the Department of Natural Resources and legislative authority. But in that case, the Minnesota Supreme Court spoke at length about the fact that as an agency, the DNR has only that authority which it is given by the legislature. And then it talks about express authority in a statute. And if there is no express authority, and I'm not yet sure what I'll hear from the commissioner, but it says if there is no express authority, then we look to implied authority. And the Minnesota Supreme Court said that it is reluctant to find implied authority, but explained the circumstances under which it might.
Right, no, that, we should have probably cited to that case. I'm familiar with it. And so the DNR, as the court knows, has vast authority over many subject areas. It's one of the most significant departments. And so because, but it's not a, it doesn't reflect a constitutional office, so we have to look to the statutes. Here, the express authority to change lake names, I think, is clear in 83.8.05, but only applies to lake names used less than 40 years. Then with respect to the implied authority, the problem that we had, as I mentioned, and apparently the DNR commissioner had it because the DNR commissioner did not mention it, is the limitations in 83.8.02, including, you know, apparently you can't give names to lakes, streams, places, and other geographic features if there's already a single generally accepted name in use.
Well, 83A.02 may pose a problem for the commissioner, but it seems to me that it pales in light of 83A.05.
Right, and so one of the ways you connect 83A.05 to number 3, which would be typical when you have a preamble of powers, would be when it says something like, and you mentioned it, Judge, in cooperation with the county boards and with their approval, that's number 3. And then you have the procedure in 0.05. So you typically, even a contract or a text like this, you'd have the powers and duties, and then there'd be a delineation of the procedures. So the one that most clearly links in at 0.05 is 83.02 subdivision 3. Now again, I'm making the argument, but the commissioner didn't even consider those arguments when issuing the order.
And well, I don't want to make the case more difficult or too simple, but it seems to me that this is a case that it involves a question of whether or not the DNR had legislative authority to do what it did. Is that?
That's correct, and so it comes down to the statutory interpretive issue, and Hubbard provides a good way to do that. It's not express, and so is it implied? And if you see contradictions in the language, sort of the powers and duties limiting, then that would mean that it's not implied. And so the big one here, of course, is number 2: pass upon and give names to lakes, streams, places, and other geographic features in the state for which no single generally accepted name has been in use. It's been undisputed that this name was the single generally accepted name for over 100 years.
Mr. Carlock, could not the reverse, and maybe I am now my question, making the argument for the respondent, because I've seen it, that that subdivision 3 you're referring to, the county boards, and now we have the delineation in 05 through 07 for lakes less than 40 years. By that interpretation, that means, could it not mean the legislature has intended for lakes less than 40 years, which this is not, we go through that 05 to 07 process, and in cooperation, the commissioner will presumably agree with what the county that that process comes up with. But here, where it's greater than 4 years, we go back to 02, and the commissioner simply can make that decision.
Right, and what's that's exactly the respondent's argument. And so what's strange about that argument is that the legislature has expressed in the provisions I've said interest in stability of names. So the idea that names that have longer standing would be less stable, like Lake Vermilion, Green Lake, and all that, than newer name geographic features doesn't make legislative sense, particularly in light of the text, like number 2, which I mentioned, and so forth, that the state legislature was expressing an interest in preserving older names. I mean, Minnesota, you know, has a constitutional amendment to preserve our fishing and hunting heritage. Some of that might be, you know, lake names, right? I mean, there's a huge difference in the boundary waters if you choose, mention 4 lakes as opposed to 4 other lakes, right? Because people bring up pictures. That's why names are important. And so I think here the state DNR commissioner has missed a step, and that is with these lake names of over 40 years, the commissioner has to go to the state legislature and change the name or get the approval of the name change. So I wanted to mention here on the whether the we have a continuing wrong, I wanted to mention State v. Olson. This relates to both completed action and taxpayer standing. And there's a waiver argument in the brief, which I won't mention more than that. But on Olson v. State, the Minnesota Appellate Court decision 2007, you know, taxpayer standing, there's two strands. One was restraint unlawful disbursement of funds or illegal action on part of public officials. So It's, I'm present this in the simplest way, and that is that the name change, if we're correct in our legal theory, the official name change hasn't occurred until the state legislature approves it. And so you have public officials here, the DNR commissioner, people at the DNR, they're all going forward, but there's something missing. What's missing is state legislative approval. And so we are here to get rid of quo warranto, and you would issue that. Now, in our experience in previous cases, I may just have 30 seconds, Your Honor. In previous cases, it's been that important public officials have been able to get subsequent legislation ratifying the action. So in the Sfigam case, there's subsequent legislation ratifying the court-issued spending. In the Minnesota Voters Alliance v. Ritchie case in Ramsey County District Court, after the writ issued for online voter registration, Secretary of State Ritchie got the legislation making his previously illegal conduct legal. In the Pro-Life Action Ministry versus University of Minnesota case, while the appeal was pending on a quo warranto petition, the University of Minnesota accomplished getting legislation enacted, which made his previously illegal conduct.
You're over your requested 30 seconds.
Thank
You'll have opportunity for rebuttal. Respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Christina Brown, and I'm here on behalf of the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. There's really only one question before the court this morning, and that is whether the district court properly dismissed appellant's petition for a writ of quo warranto, and that answer is yes.
And what does that depend on? What the answer to what question is that contingent upon?
Well, there's two things that need to happen before a writ of quo warranto can issue. There's a threshold showing that needs to be shown by appellant, and that is two things. One, that there is an impermissible or illegal exercise of authority, but also that impermissible and illegal exercise of authority is ongoing and continuous. And based upon the district court's finding, the decision of the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources was a single discrete act that is not ongoing, and therefore the petition for a writ of quo warranto was inappropriate.
Well, let me ask you this. Just for the sake of argument, if we were to assume that the commissioner acted without legislative authority, are you suggesting that there is no remedy for that?
It'd be our position, Your Honor, that a writ of quo warranto is an extraordinary and rarely invoked legal remedy. And this is the vehicle which appellant has chosen to challenge the commissioner's decision. There may be other vehicles and other ways to challenge the commissioner's decision, but it would not be through a petition for a writ of quo warranto.
I think that the record reflects that there was an attempt through a writ of certiorari, and that was dismissed by this court.
Yes.
And the commissioner argued for dismissal.
Yes, it was not a quasi-legislative act, or quasi-judicial act, I'm sorry.
I understand. Yes. So just out of curiosity, what would be a remedy, if not that and if not this?
Since it is a quasi-legislative act that would be before the district court, it would be appellant's responsibility then to determine an appropriate cause of action. It could be a declaratory judgment, but that does require an underlying cause of action. I do not have the information in front of me as to what specific injuries or harms appellant's members may have suffered, whether that's decreased property values, loss of business. I don't have that information, but those would be other vehicles through which to challenge the commissioner's authority other than this very limited writ that they seek.
So, Ms. Brown, with that argument, and in this case, your client's position that the writ would be appropriate only if at some point immediately prior to the commissioner actually signing the order, it would have been proper.
Yes, Your Honor, and the DNR was involved with the Hennepin County Board. They did request comments, they did receive comments, they reviewed that. This ongoing name change petition was known by appellants. I believe there were GoFundMe campaigns. I mean, this was not something that was done in the dark of night. People were aware this was ongoing. They would have been able to file a petition for a writ of quo warranto at that time. They chose not to, so they need to choose the appropriate vehicle with which to challenge the commissioner's decision.
And Ms. Brown, I noticed in your brief that the getting to the skipping past that, of course, to the statutory authority, your client convinced, and through tradition and historical interpretation, including those AG opinions that go back 50 to nearly 100 years, I guess, or so, gives the sole authority for all lake name changes to the commissioner. Given that, would that not it be in some form of at least tacit admission of an ongoing, because that is the heart of the dispute that the appellants are raising, that that's an improper interpretation, hence an illegal action on the commissioner. So wouldn't that in and of itself support an argument of an ongoing illegal conduct by a public official alleged?
That would be, and again, we're dealing just with a reticul arento, which for ongoing action, the existence of a policy, whether it's being exercised or not, has not been the type of ongoing conduct that courts recognize in these proceedings. So in the cases cited by appellant, when you have, for example, Limmer and Sfigum, the ongoing conduct at issue there was continued disbursement of funds that they argued was not illegal disbursement of funds, but that was ongoing every day. In the pro-life case, a writ of quo warranto was filed arguing that the University of Minnesota did not have statutory authority to use fetal tissue in research. That was happening. The actual research and testing of fetal tissue was happening every day. We are not changing the name of Bidet McCoska every day. This was a single discrete act. Therefore, the existence of the policy is not the type of ongoing action that's been contemplated by courts in these type of proceedings.
That reasoning would not, the Mattson case have turned out differently, even though the transfer authority itself was unconstitutional, unless there's an actual action under that authority, which might happen any minute, literally by that interpretation, until that action's taken, then you have a writ, but now it's too late because that action's taken, and it would continue to, each time a discretion is used under that policy, under that right. illegal authority.
And I would say in Mattson, the illegal conduct at issue was the management of state monies, which was, again, happening on a daily basis. It was a management of funds by the commissioner every day. So, again, that was ongoing conduct. We are dealing with the vehicle that appellant chose, which is the writ of quo warranto, which does require ongoing conduct. So we're not trying to say that we get to do whatever we want and you don't get to challenge us and we are absolved from judicial review, but you need to pick the appropriate method with which to do that.
And again, what would that be? Is it not a writ of certiorari?
You would, since it's a quasi-legislative act, you would go before the district court and you would need to allege the appropriate cause of action. And again, likely a declaratory judgment, but you need an underlying cause of action. And I am unable to articulate or to speak to what their particular harm may be. I do want to touch on the fact that a lot has been made about, or a lot of the argument is focused on the legislature reserving for itself the right to change the name of lakes that have been known in existence for over 40 years. And contrary to Pellin's assertion, the legislature did not reserve for itself the right to do that. And in fact, the Minnesota Constitution, Article 12, Section 1, specifically says that the legislature shall pass no local law or special law that changes the names of person, places, lakes, or rivers. The legislature cannot itself change the name of lakes. So there can be no reservation of authority for the legislature to do that. The legislature has very clearly in 83A said, Commissioner, you are the one responsible for determining the most appropriate names of lakes. And the State Geographic Board previously had that authority. The Attorney General opinions opine as to that, that there is no temporal limitation. There has been no argument that the Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources does not retain all of those powers of the State Geographic Board. So the language is very clear that we do have that authority.
Ms. Brown?
Well, what about the 40 years that is referenced in Section 83A.05?
So if you look at the language of 83A.05.
I'm looking at it.
Okay, sorry. It specifically says that you can change a name using 83A.05. Except that a name which has been has existed for 40 years may not be changed under the provisions of Section 83A.05 to 83A.03. You cannot use...
7, I believe.
Sorry, 83.807. You cannot use the county board name change process to change those names. We did not use 83A.05 to 83A.07 as our authority. We used 83A.02. That's where the commissioner's authority lies. So that temporal limitation, again, refers to the county board's authority, not to the commissioner's authority.
I'm just curious, then, why did the commissioner wait until the county board reached that decision or seemed to at least tacitly support the county? Number one, by that interpretation, the county had no authority to do what they did.
The DNR has a longstanding policy of requesting that counties that want the names of water bodies, lakes, other geographical features changed that have been known by their names for over 40 years to still undergo that notice and comment and public participation procedure that does give them the ability to gather information, to have counties talk to their constituents, figure out if people really are or are not in support of this and the rationale behind it, and then once that information...
They certainly didn't consider the lake owners...
And I don't know the content of those comments, but it's not just the lake owners, it's everybody in Hennepin County and their feelings about whether the name should be Bidet-McCoska, not just the people residing around the lake.
Well, if you can't do it through the county board, and that's what your interpretation of 83A.05 is, okay, then, I mean, either you can or you can't. And here, the DNR did base the changing of the name of Lake Calhoun based upon the county board's recommendation.
And the DNR, by encouraging counties to go through this process for gathering information, the DNR based its decision on the information gathered by the county board and also the comments. And it wasn't just that. It was also comments received by DNR.
Okay, but if there's no dispute here about that fact that that's not the appropriate process for a lake that has a name that's been in existence for 40 years or more, then that's not the appropriate process.
Well, the DNR, it would, under the authority granted to us by the legislature, we could do that without requesting any public input. The commissioner could determine himself or herself that this is the most appropriate name of a water body and here's the reason for it. But it's appropriate to gather more information, and that's part of the information gathering process.
Well, information gathering doesn't have to be done by suggesting, by having a county board officially pass a resolution.
And that's DNR, again, that's DNR's longstanding policy.
Or is that just political cover? I mean, I'm just trying to figure this out here.
Not political cover, but if you want to involve the constituents and the people who live in Hennepin County, having the county board hold a hearing, gathering that information, that's an important part of the process.
Not quite like a referendum, however.
But what I'm curious on that, given that it's not tied to the county anymore and it's greater than 40 years, and since the commissioner's doing this out of some sense of comity, as if I understand, and goodwill, why wouldn't the commissioner ask the citizens of all the counties in some way, and I don't know how that would be, maybe public hearings throughout the state, maybe asking the legislature just to provide some input, if not a vote, because I have the authority. If the whole idea, and everyone's agreeing, I assume your kind of agrees that it's greater than 40 years, ought to be a more deliberative, perhaps statewide process, since no one in Hennepin County today was around when that lake was named.
And, looking at, for example, 83A.02, it was the legislature's decision that the commissioner can determine the most appropriate names of lakes within the state and even exempts us from the Minnesota Administrative Procedures Act in doing so. The commissioner is not required to undertake notice and comment or to involve anybody else, but it is a policy of DNR, again, to involve people to try to get that information. They're not required, however, to do so. The fact that they chose to do so, I think, is indicative of the fact they do want public input and they don't want to just unilaterally make decisions. They do need to make sure it's the most appropriate name of the lake, but again, they're not required to do so. No.
Would you agree under an interpretation of statutory construction, we are not to assume that 05 and 07 is superfluous, but essentially by the commissioner's position, including here specifically, it would seem to be. In other words, if the commissioner desires for the county to go through 05 through 07, he can, but if the commissioner wants to change the Lake Vermilion, as Mr. Cardle, he could just do it.
He could, Your Honor. He or she could, yes.
That renders 05 through 07 largely superfluous language.
It would. I mean, again, it would still allow county boards to go through the name change process for lakes and geographical bodies that have been in existence for less than 40 years. They would still have that authority. But it does grant, again, yeah, the commissioner the right to determine the appropriate name.
So, really, you're arguing that we can just ignore 83A05, look at 83A02, and simply decide that the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources can change the name of any lake in the state of Minnesota that's been in existence 40 years or more without getting any input from anybody.
If
boards, citizens, anybody.
I would look at 83A.02 and say the legislature determined there were multiple ways to change the name of a lake. And in subsection 1...
That doesn't answer my question.
Yeah.
What I think your argument suggests is that under 83A.02, the commissioner has the authority to simply change the name of any lake in the state of Minnesota.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That would be the DNR's position.
Okay.
But I could just get maybe 10 seconds extra. I do want to just
go ahead.
Draw the court back to the, again, why we're here today, which is a Ritocorrento the appropriate mechanism for challenging what the commissioner did? Ritocorrento requires two things, not only an illegal exercise of power, but that illegal exercise of power is ongoing. To the extent appellant believes we do not have the authority to do what we did, there's no ongoing action. This is not the appropriate mechanism for doing so. To the extent it needs to be challenged, it needs to be brought in an appropriate manner before the district court. And I believe that's all, unless Your Honors have any further questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to return to 83A.02 because there's still that limiting language, and the commissioner's position is that the commissioner can change the lake names to any name the commissioner wants. And first of all, the commissioner in the addendum I pointed out relies on this first sentence, the commissioner of natural resources shall determine the correct and most appropriate name of the lakes and so forth. If that's read in the context of section 2, pass upon and give names to lakes, in the very first instance, determining the correct and most appropriate names of the lakes means in reference to how the people are referring to them. Because it's number 2 that says, give name to the lake. And so now when we see that this greater power is given to the commissioner to give a name to the lake, it's only allowed when there's no single generally accepted name that's been in use. So that would be a limitation on that authority, that the DNR commissioner cannot give a name to a lake if there's already a single generally accepted name in use. Thirdly, the verb change is used in section 3, in cooperation with the county boards and with their approval, change the name of lakes. Change refers, you have something that Judge Stauber mentioned earlier, you already have a name that's being used, an official name, and then it's being changed. And the state legislature here says, here, because it's a more radical thing, you need to cooperate with the county boards and obtain their approval. And there, I think, is the natural place where section 3 connects to 83A.05, and to require the state legislature to do any more than say, hey, DNR commissioner, you have to cooperate with the county boards with their approval to change the name of the lake, and then have the legislature provide a procedure for the county to cooperate with the DNR commissioner. I mean, that's fair. The state legislature requires for name changes cooperation with the counties, but that type of cooperation is only available with the restriction if a lake name's been used less than 40 years.
Help me just for a second. Maybe you've talked about this. Was there a referendum taken throughout Hennepin County before the name was changed?
No, Your Honor. It was just the county board vote, 4-3. The other thing, too, about the DNR commissioner, and I know it's a very powerful office and it's statewide, and there's duties to all Minnesotans, but these are the types of things that affect people locally. And so one of the reasons why I think the state legislature required local county approval is because they wanted input from the local people on these issues. because the local people are most affected. You know, if there's some sort of affection to, like, you know, for me, like I said, Red Falls Green Lake or Lake Vermilion for some others, you know, the local boards would be consulted with. And the idea that the commissioner could override the county board seems contrary to the spirit, right? What if the vote had been 4-3 against changing the name to Biddy Makuska? Could the DNR commissioner have done it anyway? Thank you, Your Honor.
The matter has been well argued. Very interesting case, and it is taken under advisement. Thank you.